Welcome to another episode of Latin America Review. Today, we are in Sao Paulo, and I'm joined by Marco Fernandez. Marco is a researcher with Tricontinental Institute and also a co-editor at Dongsheng News. He's currently based in Beijing, China, which is why we have him on today, and he's visiting home in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where he's from. Thank you so much for being with us today, Marco.
No, thank you for inviting me. It's a big pleasure and honor, actually, to be here. I've been following your work on social media, and so it's great to be talking to you.
Well, we wanted to talk about China, of course, and China's relationship with Latin America. Maybe tell us a little bit about what your life is like in China and how you moved there to begin with, what your connection was there. It's quite a big life choice, and I know you probably went there not speaking Mandarin to begin with. So tell us a little bit about how you ended up in China.
Well, I actually went to China like 3 years ago, more or less the beginning of the pandemic. So actually, I escaped from the pandemic here in Brazil and went to China, where there was no COVID for 2 years. I'm there for like work purpose related to research. We're doing some work in Tricon. We had some studies about China, and also now Dongsheng. Now we have this website, media, social media accounts. So it was basically in the purpose of having more be able to do research on the ground. And so we've been living there since then.
Tell us a little bit about what the relations between Brasilia and Beijing have looked like up until this point, perhaps during the former PT administrations and even now between Jair Bolsonaro's government, outgoing government, and Beijing. And of course, what do we expect to see the relationship kind of develop into in the coming years? This is something that Lula has been asked about during the campaign at his first press conference with international reporters. CGTN was there, as well as, I believe, Xinhua News. And they asked specifically what Lula has in mind with China. And Lula has said that he wants to maintain and develop very strong relations with all the major powers of the world. So give us a little bit of background of what the relationship has looked like so far.
Well, actually, in the last years, I would say 4 to 6 years, the relationship between Brazil and China was limited by economic relations. We could say that politically, especially in the last 4 years with Bolsonaro, we had like almost zero politics between Brazil and China, which was terrible for both sides. But economic relations are doing pretty well, at some point. So, for instance, even like the last years, Brazil and China trade, for instance, has been breaking records year after year. Last year, for instance, Brazil and China trade was $135 billion with more or less $40 billion of surplus to Brazil, which is at some, of course, in some aspects, it's of course good for Brazil. It's very rare, actually, that countries have surplus trade with China. Usually it's the opposite. So only Australia and South Korea, like countries, and the region of Taiwan. This is the three top surplus trade with China, and Brazil is the fourth. So in this aspect, of course, it's good. In terms of investments, it's the same. I would say investments, Brazil last year was the biggest recipient of Chinese investments in the world. And from 2005 till now, Brazil is the fourth biggest recipient. Only US, UK, and Australia surpasses Brazil. So in terms of economic, if you see this data, it's quite okay. But first of all, there's some limitations for the Brazilian side, because right now, the way the trade works between Brazil and China is more or less the classic center-periphery thing. So Brazil basically exports commodities to China. It's soy, iron ore, beef, and oil, crude oil. These four products, it's almost 80, 89%, 90% of the trade of the exports from Brazil to China. And of course, in terms of what Brazil imports from China, is basically manufactured products, high technology, telecommunications, etc. So in this sense, for Brazil, it's a little bit unbalanced, because we know that historically, countries who only export commodities, they have in the long term, they have this advantage. So I think this is one of the things that probably Lula's government will have to discuss with China. And there's a lot of potentialities in these relations. For instance, China had, take the case of Argentina in the last year or so. Argentina had very interesting agreements with China, mostly related to energy. But it's very interesting to see how Argentina, for instance, Argentina is now joining BRI just last few months ago. They had a few agreements regarding, for instance, hydroelectric power plant that's going to be funded by China and also built by China. They have already the biggest solar panel plant in Latin America is in Argentina, again, funded by China. And they have a very interesting deal recently regarding nuclear power plant, which is going to be funded by China. It's $8 billion. But most important, China will transfer the technology for Argentina. It's called Hualong, is the Chinese technology for nuclear energy. And I would say the biggest challenge for Brazil now, for Lula now, in terms of the economy, is this is the biggest debate right now going on in Brazil, is the reindustrialization of Brazil, because we've been suffering of a process of deindustrialization in the last decades. At the point that industry right now is more or less only 10% of Brazilian GDP, which is very low for a country with the potential of Brazil. So I think that the partnership with China is one of the most strategic that Brazil can build from now on, and especially in terms of transfer of technology and, of course, finance, funding of projects. So China is showing, not only in Argentina, but in other cases, that is willing to sit with the countries and have a more strategic partnership and not just only buy commodities and sell, I don't know, electronics or high technology products. So this is, I think, is the most important thing in terms of the relationship between Brazil and China, that Lula has the possibility to sit with Xi Jinping and propose a higher level a partnership.
As you know, everyone on the exterior outside of Brazil is now an expert on Brazil because a lot of people follow the elections and the process here. And especially in the United States, a lot of people, you know, find it very exciting for whatever reason. There's actually a lot of people in the U.S. who support Bolsonaro. Obviously, you know, a lot of people who wanted to see Bolsonaro leave office as well. But one of the sort of criticisms or things that people tend to say about Lula is that he's a social democrat, that he's not a real socialist. People, you know, will compare him to, obviously, Nicolas Maduro and others and say, you know, he's a bit of a centrist. But, you know, one of the most compelling and interesting things has been that, you know, his work and working to eradicate hunger and bring about those policies that help the most vulnerable sectors of society, such as himself and his own family when he was growing up. And so that's something that he has said time and time again since before the campaign even launched, that he wants to make sure that they are removed, that Brazil gets removed from the hunger map once again, and that Brazil really picks up in terms of food production, given that it's already a top food and meat producer, more specifically, in the world. And so first of all, I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about that. That seems very ambitious and also something that could make Brazil a leader in the region. Talk about that a little bit in terms of the situation with hunger and food production in Brazil. And I don't know, are there any lessons that Brazil can take from China? And how does this involve China, if it does?
Good question. So first of all, when Lula was president, like 20 years ago, this was also one of the priorities since the beginning. And Brazil, I mean, you guys know that Brazil created this Bolsa Família. It's a sort of like a money transfer for the poorest families. And it was very well succeeded, this program. And Brazil actually got out of the so-called the map of hunger from United Nations. So this is possible. It was already done. But of course, right now, we're living in a situation, Brazil has a tragic situation after 6 years of right-wing and extreme right-wing governments. And right now, for instance, more than 30 million people in Brazil suffer with hunger, like every single day. And almost half of the population, some days you have food, some days you don't have food. So this is actually, as President Lula said, this is a shame. For a country, as you said, is one of the biggest producers of food in the world. But of course, we know this is part of the contradictions of capitalism. I mean, it doesn't matter if the food is there. If you don't have money, you're just gonna starve. So in this sense, I think this is it's clear for Lula that this is number one priority and day one of government is to tackle this issue of hunger and extreme poverty. But your question about what are examples that maybe Brazil could learn from China, I would say the eradication of extreme poverty that was very well succeeded in China in like 2 years ago, I think this is one of the biggest lessons that Brazil could maybe learn something. Because one thing that worked very well in China was the capacity of the government to mobilize the entire society. Public sector, private sector, I mean, all the layers of like companies and students and of course the party. Remember the party, Communist Party of China has 97 million members. So that was a very clever way to tackle this issue because, first of all, China sent 3 million members of the party to live in the villages, the poorest villages of the country, to be responsible for the execution of the program, poverty alleviation campaign. So this is something, of course, I mean, PT doesn't have 97 million members, but the government can find creative ways to mobilize the entire society for this urgency that we have. And even like, I don't know, could like create, for instance, jobs for people to be sort of like working in the projects to create jobs, to create, in China, for instance, they created lots of co-ops, like peasants co-ops. So people were producing money. I think this is the biggest difference between the Brazilian model and the Chinese model, is that the Brazilian model was very well succeeded, but it was basically transfer of money. And of course, they also had more data about the families, so this data could also help them to figure out other social programs. But in case of China, most of the things were about creating jobs, creating income to people. So I think this could be maybe something that Brazil and Lula's government could maybe study. Well, by the way, Tricontinental, we did a study about poverty alleviation. Is it in Portuguese? We try to make sure that people from the government can read. So yeah, I think this is one of the things that Brazil could learn from China.
Well, as in the start of any mandate for a new president, they try really hard to be very diplomatic. And that's what Lula and his incoming government is going to do, is try to start off on the right foot with Washington and with all countries. But of course, we know that Lula will be trying at one point or another to push a little bit of a progressive agenda. And he does want to mend relations with many countries that he says were broken with Bolsonaro's failed diplomacy. And so he will be looking to strengthen trade relations, cooperation, deepen cooperation with many countries, including the BRICS countries, at a time when other countries, as you mentioned, are as well, such as Argentina, obviously Bolivia, whether or not people are looking, countries like Bolivia, and Cuba and Venezuela are strengthening ties with Iran, obviously China and Russia, but other countries as well, Turkey, etc. And so this is what we expect to see from Lula. How do you think that relationship is going to pan out with Washington? And yeah, like, what do you see Lula doing? And maybe you can touch on, I guess, the complexity of having such a large coalition, let's say, that brought Lula to power, and he's going to have quite a mixed government. It's not a bunch of PT militants that are going to be jumping in those ministries, as we begin to see the ministers being announced these weeks now.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, a little bit of history. So we had a very a big trauma in our history in the last years was the coup against President Dilma. And as we know, for many documentations and leaks, etc., that the United States were very involved in all the process that took Dilma out of power and then took put Lula in jail. So we know, and to be honest, if we remember, that was Obama's government, and the vice president was Joe Biden. So of course it's always going to be a challenge how to deal with the U.S., especially for Latin American countries. And we also know that this happened because Lula and Dilma, they were building a very, I would say, innovative or bold diplomacy regionally and globally. Regionally with UNASUR, the creation with UNASUR, the countries of South America, but also the creation of CELAC in 2000 and around 2009, more or less, with the whole all the countries of America but U.S. and Canada. So that's the story. And Lula has been saying this during the campaign, that one of his first tasks regarding foreign relations will be to rebuild the regional platforms, UNASUR and CELAC, but also de facto going back to BRICS, because Brazil never left BRICS as it did with CELAC in 2019. But Brazil, we know that was not actually active in BRICS, and especially Bolsonaro, he didn't actually give a shit to BRICS, and Brazil lost this opportunity for many years. So, and as you mentioned, also BRICS now is debating about the expansion of the platform. So for sure that at some point there will be some sort of contradictions with the United States. We have to be prepared for that. But also it's going to be complex. Also, as you mentioned, the government is a very broad coalition. There is, of course, some sectors of this coalition that are more related to the U.S. But even though, I think for Lula, it's clear that this is one of his main tasks, is how to, first of all, how to reestablish Brazil as a global player in a geopolitical stage, but also how to recreate the integration of Latin American countries. It's actually very interesting because Lula just won this election now. It's a very good timing, because we had, in June, we have a historic election of Gustavo Petro in Colombia, right? For the first time, Colombia has a center-left president. And since last year, especially President López Obrador from Mexico and President Alberto Fernández from Argentina, they sort of led the reconvening of CELAC. They did a meeting last year in Mexico City, and the next one is already scheduled to Buenos Aires. It was supposed to be December, but I think they're postponing to have Lula there. So this is a big expectation for us, because we know that in the current stage of geopolitics, how crucial are these the regional alliances, especially for countries like us in Latin America, that historically had to deal with lots of intervention from U.S., either direct or indirect through hybrid wars or color revolution. So I think also the last thing I would say that, I mean, let's see how the government will go in a few days. But some of us suspect that Lula will have even more space to make progress in foreign relations than domestically. I think some of the issues, some of the economic key issues of economy and politics are going to be more difficult for Lula to deal with inside Brazil than outside of Brazil. Even because right now there's also a lack of global leaders in the world. Like, if you look at the U.S., Europe, there's no nobody with enough charisma and legitimacy to propose global agreements, etc. It's actually the opposite. What G7, NATO is trying is just to smash all the attempts of the Global South to organize. So yeah, in this sense, I think there's a big hope of the Lula, the role that Lula can play in the global stage from January 1st.
Okay, well, speaking of January 1st, we already saw a bit of a wave of protests, let's say. We saw a wave of protests immediately following the October 30th election, including here in Sao Paulo. It was quite large, I have to say. Some of my friends here from the social movement said that, you know, I shouldn't be giving these people airtime, of course. But, you know, I didn't come all the way to Brazil to report on only half the story. And I think it's very important to show that these protests do exist and, you know, kind of reveal the character of it and have the audience decide for themselves. But maybe you can tell us a little bit, since once again this week we saw some vehicles set on fire in Brasilia and different things on the 12th, December 12th, which was the day that Lula received his credentials, his diploma from the TSC in Brasilia. So it looks like protests are going to continue in some way, at least until the inauguration. So what's your analysis of this sort of Bolsonarista uprising in the streets? You know, the sort of culture of it. What does it mean? What does it really represent? Is it a real threat to Lula's incoming government? Who's commanding it? Where are they getting the idea to go out and do these things and call for the armed forces to intervene? Explain a little bit of that.
Yeah, that's going to be a big challenge, because I think one of the legacies of Bolsonaro government this 4 years was he was able to sort of build a movement. That's the first time in Brazilian history we have an extreme right-wing movement. It's also a mass movement. Mass movement was only in the history was only organized by the left. But for the first time, we have extreme right wing, organizing and going to the streets and doing protests. So that's not, these people will be there. One of the things that, I think Lula has a chance to maybe bring back some of these people that, right now is supporting Bolsonaro or is anti Workers' Party, etc. If the economy goes well, if Brazil goes back to growth and opportunities for especially for young people in terms of jobs and careers, etc. So there's a chance of bringing back a part of this movement. But I think there's still a core of this movement, is like a few million people that they're going to probably be confronting the government, try to boycott everything. So and there, of course, there is this also challenge of, how many Bolsonaro supporters we have in the armed forces, in the military, but also in the police, the military police, for instance. So this could be an element of what is it called? This can bring problems to the government. We know that there's a lot of people that at this point, it's very hard to dialogue. They live in this sort of fantasy world of fake news and through social media. I don't know. They think that the Earth is flat. They think that there's a lot of conspiracy theories about the communists in power, about the relation with China, etc. So this could be probably one of the biggest challenges that Lula will face it. But also, I think this probably brings the government to another challenge, or maybe a lesson that was in the first two governments of Lula, two terms, and also Dilma's terms. There was not much mobilization from the progressive forces of society, from the left, from the social movements. I think for many years, it was sort of like, okay, guys, don't worry. You don't need to mobilize. We are in power now. Let us to deal with the capitalists. Let us to run the country. And I think this is also part of the reason why we lost the government in 2016. So we also hope that Lula, I mean, with this historic experience, in some way, Lula will also have to challenge sometimes some sectors of the ruling class, of the bourgeoisie, and of the some sectors of the extreme right wing in Brazil. And of course, this would be also the role of the social movements, of the progressive forces, to be able to confront this attempt to boycott the government, to put lots of limitations and challenges. So, I mean, we must learn with the history, with the recent history, and the mistakes that the left made also in Brazil, especially after 2013.
It seems like the social movements were really beyond that top level of professionalized campaigning and all the big budget that the PT had. It really was on the ground level, the social movements on the street. Here in Sao Paulo, the people I know, of course, are from the social movements, the housing movements and the landless movements. And it really just seems that they're the ones who made the entire campaign. So what do you think they're going to be pushing for? What are the most important policies, you think, for the landless movement, for example?
Yeah, I think Brazil is facing probably one of the worst moments of our history, economically, politically, and socially. So there is a lot of demands from all the sectors of society, from the landless to the people, the so-called Sem Teto, the movements of housing movements, youth movements, women's movements, indigenous people movement. I think, for instance, like the black movement. I think, for instance, one of the new one of the new actors we had in the last few years in Brazil was exactly the indigenous people's movement that mobilized a lot in Brasilia. Right now, they are facing a big threat from mining companies, from agribusiness invading the indigenous reserves, etc. So this was part of the Bolsonaro policies for the agribusiness and against indigenous people's rights. So I think there's a lot of demands from food to land to jobs. So yeah, I think that and also I think this some sectors of the society, the more progressive sectors, as I was mentioning, I think also we learn with the lesson of the last few years how much if only the right wing goes to the streets, we're going to lose. We're going to lose this battle. We're not going to achieve our demands. So, and it also it's a role of the movements to push the government. I mean, even, of course, now we have Lula, it's a progressive government, Workers' Party, but we know that if the movements are not in the street pushing people, it's very easy to lose the power. Even like being the president, but not having the power, as we saw with Dilma from 2014 until the coup in 2016, or some cases in Latin America right now. We're just seeing what's happening in Peru. It's not enough just to win the election. If you don't mobilize the progressive forces to sustain this progressive governments in Latin America, we know, right wing is very powerful, is well organized, and has big allies like Washington. So they are able to destabilize this government. And I think it's very clear for U.S. that this new wave of progressive governments are probably going to put some challenges and going to get into conflict with some of the Washington policies. So at the end of the day, I think 2023 will be a very exciting year because, with Brazil, Colombia, CELAC back, UNASUR back, and even BRICS probably more with more strength, I think we're going to have both internationally and domestically in Brazil. It's going to be a very exciting year with a lot of challenges for the left.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be very exciting. And that's why I thought it was so important to be here, to cover Lula's inauguration, be there to see who he's going to be appointing to all the ministries and what his first steps are going to be. when he enters the presidency. And, you know, there are a lot of expectations that things are going to be changing very quickly. So as I mentioned to you, and for anyone who's listened, when Ollie and I do the podcast together, we have a little bit of a culture section, but Ollie's not here. He's on his way to Buenos Aires to party and watch that World Cup final together. So I'm just going to ask you one sort of culture question. And it's something that, you know, we haven't really been able to touch on a whole lot. But, you know, everyone's talking about how Latin America is strengthening ties with China, trade ties, economic ties. But obviously, there's a huge culture issue that we're not really dealing with, which is that, you know, even between Brazil and Spanish-speaking Latin America, sometimes there's a little bit of a gap. And that's why people don't always cover Brazil. They, like, forget about it, even though it's this massive, hugely populated country. And so maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of the things you've discovered in China that are different from Brazil. Is it a bit of a culture shock for you to come home after going there? One of the things that I joked about with my friend was that you wouldn't want to record an interview on the street because you're so accustomed to China where it's really safe. And everyone who lives in China and comes to Latin America thinks it's dangerous. So tell us a little bit about the culture. Share something with us about the culture that you've learned since moving there, how it's different from here.
Wow, ooh, that's a big question. Yeah, first of all, I think the, of course, the issue of, I think COVID was a big deal because I moved to China exactly at the beginning of the pandemics. So I've been back to Brazil. This is my third time in 3 years. But I've been here, for instance, in November, December 2020, where Brazil was having maybe 2,000 deaths a day. And I was coming from a country, China, who had no COVID at all, but also where we were very trained and disciplined to follow all the instructions regarding health measures. So, for instance, like using the mask, that for us in China is like almost natural now. You don't leave your place without a mask. It's even funny because, I mean, you have a mask and then, okay, you got to a place that you don't need a mask, maybe with friends, and then you put a mask in your pocket. So at some point, almost every pen or jacket or shorts you have, there is a mask in your pocket. Because, so when you leave, it's like, oh my God, I forgot a mask. And then you see, oh no, there's a mask here. So it's always ready. But when I came back to Brazil, first time in November 2020, it was a shock because, I mean, a lot of people were not using masks. And it was like 2,000 people dying every single day. I mean, China, we had 5,200 deaths in 3 years. And this was like 3 days in Brazil. So we were a little bit shocked with this lack of... Because, of course, the government here, they were not like campaigning. They were not like raising consciousness in the population. You remember, Bolsonaro just said, oh, this is just a flu. And 700,000 people died in our country. So I think this is one of the things for me that was very shocking in these years was this difference of, how to deal with COVID. And I would say also the safety is something. I know that after living in China for 3 years, I'm used to, like, I don't know, have my cell phone in the streets. You should not have this everywhere in São Paulo because it's a little bit dangerous. And what else? Well, I think I miss going to football stadiums. We are here just by an old stadium of São Paulo, Pacaembu. I think it's possible. I mean, I was joking with a person today. I was buying some water in the streets, and then I was like, oh, because you know, in China, everything is.
A little bit here, actually, more than other
last. Yeah, there is already a little bit. Yeah, there is a little bit, but yeah, but I mean, I think in terms of the, I think of course for me as a Brazilian, of course this huge inequality that we see in the streets in the city, I mean, it's not that China doesn't have inequalities, but especially in the cities, in the big cities, you don't see like homeless people or people starving in the streets. And this is for us, I mean, this is almost second nature in Brazil. We always, Latin America, the whole, it's everywhere. So, I mean, as a Brazilian and at this moment of the history that we are in a very bad situation, yeah, I would love to see our country, I mean, improving in this area of at least solving the basic demands of the people, like food, like a job, like housing, and things that China already was able to provide to most of its 1.4 billion people. Yeah. Yeah, and at the end of the day, I think I miss, I miss football. And I think one thing that I start to miss almost is Chinese food when I'm in Brazil. I also meet Brazilian food, of course, when I'm there, but I'm really, I'm becoming a big fan of Chinese food, which is huge. It's an infinite universe. I mean, there's 31 provinces. Each province is a universe of food, of different food. Sometimes I go to have a dinner with friends, 40 years old, and I ask, oh, what is this dish? And the friend said, I don't know, I never saw it before. So that's the, I mean, a 40-year-old person can go to a Chinese restaurant and don't recognize the food because it's from some province that he never been to. So it's a fascinating universe to dive into, the Chinese food universe.
Well, thank you so much for joining Latin America Review, our podcast on Causacha News. We're with Marco Fernandez today. He is a Brazilian who now lives in Beijing and is a researcher at Tricontinental Institute, as well as co-editor at Dongsheng News, which produces all sorts of news on China in English, Spanish, Portuguese, and is a relatively new outlet, but a really good source for news on China. And he's joining us here today in Sao Paulo. Remember, you can subscribe on Patreon to support our podcast and see all of our episodes. Thanks so much, Marcos.